Hello, Mind Bloomers! This is Mind Bloom, the safe space at the intersection of mental health advocacy and breast cancer awareness. Mind Bloom is your podcast. Come back weekly and listen to my guests as they reflect on their close encounters with emotional disorders and breast cancer. Not an easy task, but we promise to make your mind bloom. Hello, Mind Bloomers. This is Marina G, your host, and this is Mind Bloom. Please remember, the content provided by Mind Bloom is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking medical treatment because of any content referenced or authored by Mind Bloom You. Hi guys, hello, how are you today? Good morning. Welcome to episode 45 of Mind Bloom. Can you imagine 45 episodes? What are we gonna do for episode 50? Such a big, exciting number. It's coming up sooner than you think. So good to be here with you today. How's the weather where you are? How is the day where you are today? Happy Monday, happy week. I went early morning, I went for a walk in the park to get the week started going fresh with a walking meditation, just setting my intentions for the week and getting ready. A lot is going to happen. Anyway, it's episode 45, I was saying, of Mind Bloom. I can't even believe it. We started January 10th. I was waiting for the results of a breast biopsy. I didn't know what to do with myself. The anxiety was through the roof. And I started a podcast. I was looking for answers. I didn't know what to make of my diagnosis. And I was just looking for answers, and I found not only answers, but I found friends and friends and friends and friends in the breast cancer community, and I am so happy. It's so good to be here. I was just saying the podcast started in June of last year when I was waiting for the results of a biopsy, a breast biopsy, and I didn't know what to do with myself, and so I started a podcast. It was like my journaling. It was like, I'm just going to put it out there, just going to say it, and maybe the ghosts and the demons will go away if I say it. You know, just say it in words. And I think it scared them away for sure. So this is what we have. I have two big news to give the whole Mind Bloom audience. I've been announcing and talking about the surprise that is coming, that is the surprise that is going to, I guess, come to fruition on April 1st. And it's not April Fool's Day, it's for real a thing. So the first news, the first big news is that Blooming Academy, and I'll explain what that is in just one second, the Blooming Academy is going to launch April 1st, so April Fool's Day, if you'd like. The Blooming Academy, what is it? So as you know, my whole enterprise, I guess, is called Mind Bloom. And then the Blooming Academy is my school, is my community, and it's where I'm going to be offering memberships and one-on-one programs to help women go through breast cancer with a happy, good, strong mental health. The Blooming Academy, my school, my community, that's got a club on Clubhouse, it's got a Facebook group, it's got its own Instagram here on its own Instagram account here on Instagram, is in full bloom, pardon the pun, and it's launching April 1st. So like I was saying, full memberships, monthly guests talking about how to, let's say, get visibility on your Instagram, get yourself out there on Clubhouse. And this is specific for women who have a history of breast cancer. You want to tell a story? You have a story of resilience to tell? Well, the Blooming Academy and Mind Bloom are going to teach you to do just that. Not teach you, but walk with you, be there with you along the way. So if you want, we're going to do lives together. If you're too scared to try it on your own, I was, trust me. We can do Facebook Lives if you want. We can co-moderate rooms on Clubhouse. I'm going to hold your hand. I'm going to be there all along the way. And I'm going to help you with scanxiety, with seeing your doctor, with just opening that envelope with your biopsy results or your MRI results, because I have seen it all. I've known all the biopsies, all types of biopsies, and I know how triggering and how complicated it can be. And the woman with breast cancer is not just that, a body that's, you know, being invaded by breast cancer. They are moms, they are wives, they have pets like my dog Bianca. They have beautiful gardens to tend to. They have their companies, their enterprises, their nonprofits. And so how do we manage all of this? Well, I don't have the secret sauce for that, but I guarantee you I will walk the long walk with you because I've been there. So that is news number one. News number one is Blooming Academy in full bloom April 1st. Let me tell you a quick secret. I already have one client who's joined the membership. And we haven't even launched yet. Also, I'm going to be giving you guys discounts, 25% off. The sky's the limit. So talk to me, join me, DM me, come say hi. And you know where to find me. Let me just plug that in right away. You know where to find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Clubhouse, LinkedIn, Mind Bloom You, my website, mindbloomyou.com, YouTube. YouTube's a little bit on pause right now because I cannot do all the things, I promise you. YouTube, Mind Bloom. And what else am I missing? My podcast, obviously, on any podcast app of your choosing, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, all of it. Just find me as Mind Bloom. So shoot me an email, shoot me a DM. My email is info@mindbloomyou.com. Send me a DM here on Instagram, on Twitter. Find me on Clubhouse. Let's work together as a collaboration or as mentor-mentee tag teams. That's how I want to see it. That's how I want you to see it as well. The other news is that I am moving to Medellin, Colombia in 10 days. Yep. I'm not really moving, as in I'm going to settle. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. But I am going to be doing some digital nomading in South America for the next maybe 6 months, 1 year, who knows. I guess we can work from anywhere these days. The Blooming Academy can work from anywhere. Mind Bloom as a podcast and as a breast cancer and mental health platform can work and exist from anywhere. So I thought I'd pack my beautiful dog Bianca and myself and off we go. Discover new places, new foods, new cultures, new people, new everything. I mean, we're it's COVID still, so we're all going to be still very, very careful. I believe I have to quarantine for 2 weeks once I get there. But, well, you know, going to see what the geohacking dream is all about and the digital nomading dream. See what those are all about and really just go for a long walk through the American continent, because it's much more than the United States, I guarantee you. So those are my big, big news. Mind Bloom and the Blooming Academy opening April 1st. It's not an April Fool's Day lie. And me packing my bags also on April 1st. So yes, talk about multitasking, talk about me being everywhere. Of course, I mean, it's probably not the first that I'll be like teaching classes, but on the second, on the third, you know where to find me. I am here for you. I know you are excited for me. I am so, so, so excited and nervous and antsy and jittery, all the things. But you know what? The sun is shining. The flowers and the little plants are beginning to bloom. So I think we can do this. I think we got this. It's gonna be okay. Just wanted to give a big shout out to J. Renee Bejeweled. She gave me this beautiful necklace, and I'm gonna drop her link on Instagram in the Instagram caption. So thank you, Renee, for the beautiful necklace you gave me. Thank you all, guys. This was episode 45, if you can believe it, of Mind Bloom, and I will see you all next week. Bye-bye. Hello, Dr. Alexia. How are you? It's a pleasure to have you on Mind Bloom.
I am wonderful, and thank you so much for inviting me on to share my story. I'm so grateful for you inviting me to your platform today. So I am Dr. Alexia. I am a triple board certified infectious disease physician. I am a mom, a speaker, an author, an advocate, and a cancer wellness coach. And all of that other stuff, which is so important to me, came out of being diagnosed with stage 3 breast. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 37. I had a large tumor in my right breast with significant lymph node involvement, and was found to have also a small tumor in my left breast after I underwent bilateral mastectomies. I always tell people that my breast cancer diagnosis was 2 years in the making, and I was known to be high risk, yet I received, you know, disparate care, really. And only after I was diagnosed with breast cancer was I diagnosed with a genetic mutation. I'm a PALB2 genetic mutant that increases my risk for breast cancer, ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer. And I have an ATM gene variant of undetermined clinical significance, excuse me.
And I wanted to ask you now, if you don't mind, if it's okay, sure, that you walk us through your specific journey. Mm-hmm. I know we talked about this earlier and in other instances as well. I believe we had a similar diagnosis of LCIS. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, and I'm sure people at home will be curious as well, to hear this story of a diagnosis 2 years in the making.
Yeah.
Where really no steps were taken, and why not, and all mm-hmm. of that. So if you could share, that'd be awesome.
Sure. So when I tell people that my cancer diagnosis was 2 years in the making, it's because it really was. So when I was 35, I found a lump in my left breast on a routine self breast exam. And let me tell you, I know my breasts intimately, or I knew them intimately. They're gone now. I have been doing self breast examinations since I was 20 years old. And I began doing them when I met a young Black woman who had been diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. After finding a lump and, not being taken seriously until she was already metastatic. So she toured college campuses talking to young women about self breast exam. So began examining my breast very young, found my first lump when I was 21, just as I was navigating into medical school and while my grandfather was dying from metastatic prostate cancer. So it was a very crazy transition point in my life. And I found this little tiny pebble, like the size of a nerd's candy, in my left breast. And it began to grow rapidly, went from that nerd's candy to a pea to a marble. Mm-hmm. And eventually, navigating a healthcare system without health insurance as a young Black woman, I was told, it's probably not cancer. You're too young for it to be cancer, and not given an answer until I met a general surgeon who was a woman, who listened, who took me seriously, who did an appropriate exam and ordered ultrasound imaging and confirmed what she believed it to be, which was a fibroadenoma. A year later, I had it removed, but I remember clearly being told that it doesn't mean that I'm at increased risk for breast cancer. And I've been told mixed things about that since then. So some people say it's a predictor of future breast cancer. Some people say that it isn't. For me, I believe that it was a signal that my body was clearly capable of making abnormal cells. So from then till 35, always consistently did monthly self breast exams. And I found like a little, almost marble sized lump in my left breast on a Sunday night, brought it to the attention of my primary care doctor that Monday. And by that Friday, I was having an ultrasound of my left breast. When I left the radiology suite, I was given a preliminary report that it looked like a fibroadenoma, and I was super happy. Good, it's benign, I can go on with my life. But unfortunately, when they did the formal read, they said, no, it looks a little more suspicious and you need to have a biopsy. And in radiology, they kind of give this impression and they give you these next step options for you and your clinician to figure it out together. So I remember it said BI-RADS-4, like it's highly likely this could contain cancer. Mm-hmm. And it said repeat ultrasound in 3 to 6 months or do a biopsy now, poorly clinically, right? That means you and your doctor figure it out. So I wanted to be conservative because I was a young workaholic who was building a practice and I didn't want to have to worry about downtime. So I said, well, let's just look at it again in 3 months. And my primary doctor was like, absolutely not. You're a young Black woman. And if this is cancer, you're more likely to die from it. You're getting a biopsy now. And she went with me and held my hand to get this biopsy. And the biopsy report showed not only was there, the biopsy report showed LCIS, the lobular carcinoma in situ. So I was immediately put into the care of a breast surgeon. And he just said that because of the risk for future cancer, and I think the risk is like 20% in an LCIS lesion, his recommendation was to do a lumpectomy. So I had the lumpectomy, and when they looked at the mass in the pathology lab, yes, there was LCIS there, the lobular carcinoma in situ. And there was also fibroadenoma there. But within the fibroadenoma was another type of abnormal cells called atypical lobular hyperplasia. So I had 3 types of abnormal cells present in my left breast. And based on that, they said, okay, you're at high risk to develop a breast cancer, you have to go on a high risk screening protocol. So that included basically cancer imaging every 3 months. So I got mammograms and breast ultrasounds alternating with breast MRIs. And periodically, they would find something. And so it would either result in a biopsy, and more imaging or subsequent lumpectomy, placement of markers in my breast where they had done biopsies. And finally, my primary care doctor said, you need to cut those off. Like, you need to get a bilateral mastectomy. You have ticking time bombs on your chest and they're going to go off. In the meantime, I had been placed in the care of a breast oncologist. I was started on tamoxifen to try to decrease my risk of progression to breast cancer. And with all of that going on, you know, I said, yeah, like, can I just get a bilateral mastectomy? Can't we just cut them off? Because at some point they're going to get me. And in the meantime, I did everything I knew at the time to do, which was lose weight, take red meat out of my diet. I started avoiding dairy products and cow's milk. I started to lose weight. So I lost like 24 to 26 pounds because I knew that being overweight or obese could increase extra estrogen production in my body. And that could be something that fuels cancer. The estrogen alone would be a risk factor, as well as the overweight obese status is a cancer risk factor, not just for breast cancer, for several others. And so I was trying to decrease my risk. But, you know, nothing decreased risk like a risk-reducing surgery, such as a mastectomy. And my breast surgeon said to me, no, it's too radical. It's too radical to cut your breast off. We are monitoring you closely. You don't need to cut your breast off. And so I said, well, what about genetic testing? If I have a gene mutation, you know, wouldn't that make me a candidate for a prophylactic bilateral mastectomy? That was not my language at the time. I was like, wouldn't that make me a candidate to get these things cut off, you know? And he was like, you're not a candidate. You don't have the right family history. You don't fit criteria. You can't have genetic testing. The right thing to do would have been to refer me to a genetic counselor and have someone who is specifically and explicitly educated in that area to make that decision for and with me. Right. And if I had known better, I'm not a cancer doctor. I'm not a geneticist. I'm not a breast surgeon. If I had known better, I would have just pursued genetic testing with my primary doctor, maybe even ordered it myself. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know at the time. And I just put all my faith in my doctors. Mm-hmm. Subsequent to that, I saw my breast oncologist and I said to her, shouldn't I get a bilateral mastectomy? She said the exact same thing. No, it's too radical. Like, what the, is there a script? Like, this is what we tell people? Like, why is everybody saying this is too radical? But I took that to be the truth, that it was too radical to cut my breast off. And so I said the same thing. Well, what about genetic testing then? And she said the same thing he said. You don't meet criteria. So, you know, after 2 years of going through this whole cycle of mammogram, ultrasound, plus or minus biopsy, MRI, biopsy, plus or minus a surgery or whatever, finally, I had an MRI that was abnormal. And it was so abnormal that they called me in right away and they said, listen, you need to have a breast biopsy. There's a mass. It's suspicious. You need a biopsy. And when I walked into that MRI suite and saw that tumor in my breast on the image on the screen, I knew that it was cancer deep down in my heart. But, you know, human nature is like, maybe it's just a really big benign tumor. I've had a benign tumor before. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it won't be cancer yet, but, you know, deep down in my heart, I knew. I was just kind of like mentally and emotionally bargaining. And so when I had that biopsy, which was the MRI guided biopsy, was the most painful of all of the biopsies that I had received. When I didn't get a call in 48 hours, I knew for sure that it was cancer because I'd had enough biopsies to know that if it's, you know, LCIS or fibroadenoma or something benign, you get those results in 48 hours. It's quick. If it takes longer than that, it's because they're doing special stains and they're doing tumor markers. They're trying to see, is it hormone receptor positive? Is it or negative? Is it HER2 positive or negative? And so when I got that phone call on the fifth day, I knew I had cancer. And when I went to see my doctors afterwards, it felt like a stab in the chest to then be told by the same people who said it was too radical to cut my breast off and I didn't meet criteria for genetic counseling, to then say, you're 37 years old. I opted to have a bilateral mastectomy, by the way. And so when I had the bilateral mastectomy, of course they, you know, got the dimensions of my tumor on the right side, which was 9.5 centimeters. I had to have a lymph node dissection because my sentinel lymph nodes, one of the three, was positive. And they took out a total of 15 lymph nodes. 9 of them were positive for cancer. And the cancer had spread beyond the capsule of the lymph node. And there was a small area of cancer in my left breast that was not picked up. And neither of even the 9.5 centimeter tumor, it was not picked up by a mammogram or breast ultrasound. So I'm one of those people, those 10 to 15% of women whose breast cancer will not be picked up on an ultrasound or a mammogram. So if you feel something doesn't feel right, you're having symptoms in the breast and ultrasound, mammogram are negative, advocate to get an MRI, little plug there. But after I went through all of that and they realized I had cancer in both breasts, then they said, well, you're too young to have cancer. And nobody is. We know that's not the truth. But, you know, relatively speaking, right? You're 37 years old with cancer and it's in both breasts. That is unusual. You need genetic testing.
Well, thank you.
Right. And so it was just, it was like a gut punch to be told that. And even worse, to be on the receiving end of a diagnosis of being a PALB2 mutant, of having a genetic mutation that predisposed me to breast cancer and would have made me a candidate for the prophylactic surgery that I requested prior. So I had a cancer that was completely avoidable. Could have been prevented. And I know that there are going to be other women out there who are in the same position. And so sharing my story and allowing another woman to hear what happened to me, to be able to go to their doctor and say, listen, you know, I met or I heard a story of a woman who is a similar age to me or had similar things going on. And she only found out after she had cancer that she had a mutation that would have, you know, allowed her to have a prophylactic surgery. And I don't want that to be my story either. So even though I have to go through all of the things I have to go through, so many complications that I experience after surgery and after chemo, if this story, sharing my story the same way the young woman, I want to say her name is Rashida Lewis, and, you know, God rest her soul if I'm misspeaking her name, the same way she shared her story to change the lives of other women, I'm absolutely a stand for my story and what I went through to prevent someone else from going through this.
Have your Have your doctors apologized or say anything at all?
No. So they don't apologize for it. And it's something that I struggle with in continuing my care with my doctors, because I know they were well-intended, but we can't be well-intended in medicine. You know, we have to, yes, practice the standard of care, but we also have to, you know, respect the fact that the standard of care doesn't necessarily apply to everyone. And if your patient is at an increased risk, regardless of the reason, you have to, you know, kind of deviate from the standard of care, or you have to be more aggressive in your patients who are more likely to die and more likely to have negative outcomes. Because the reality is that a significant part of why we are more likely to die really falls on the healthcare system and falls on our healthcare providers. You know, there's nothing inherent about living in Black skin itself that makes me more at risk. You know, the disparate outcomes also come from disparate care and from our history not being considered, from, you know, how the healthcare system regards us. Because I know that if I was an Ashkenazi Jewish woman, I would have had genetic testing, regardless of my family history. And if we don't know somebody's family history at all, that's enough, you know? And, you know, there was just so many opportunities from the time we had the initial conversation and I was given the initial no on the prophylactic surgery and the genetic testing to bring me back in and say, you know what, on second thought, you know? So that's a very challenging thing. Maybe I'm making it up, but I just feel like the way my doctors look at me and speak to me and handle me is different since my diagnosis. And I feel like it's showing up in this apologetic way without apologizing. And that's the best that I can explain it, you know, but I get the difference.
You kept them and you keep working with them.
Even that is challenging for me, you know, as a working woman, as a mother who, you know, is practically a single mom, you know, the ability to be taken care of and to be, you know, compliant or adherent with my care. Part of that is because I get my care close to home and close to work, you know. In the beginning, when I was diagnosed, a lot of people encouraged me to like switch my care to like Sloan Kettering and travel to the city. But that's 2 hours away. So you're talking 2 hours there, 2 hours back, looking for parking or paying for parking, plus the time you spend in treatment. And that is really challenging to do while, you know, parenting a child, while, you know, having a career and taking care of other people's health and wellness, plus being an advocate and an educator in the cancer community. And I trust the care there more than I trust it in other places nearby. So I stay there because of that. But it's not an easy decision to continue care where you feel like in some sense you've been failed.
Do you think they are now more aggressive towards other patients?
I hope so. You know, I really go out of my way to share resources with them that are specific for Black and Brown women, especially support groups. So for example, when I became an ambassador for the Breast of Us, I made sure to get pamphlets and flyers and information and put that in the hands of my oncologist and my breast surgeon and say, these resources are specific for Black women. Because I don't live in a community that is predominantly Black. Like today, for whatever odd reason, I was at my cancer center and I saw 6 Black people there. That's the most. And I just was like so cognizant of it. Like, I've never seen this many Black people here on one day, you know? And so I, you know, hand them that information and say, listen, this is support services that is specific for Black women and women of color who are experiencing breast cancer. Because when you're the only person in the room and nobody in there shares your story, nobody in there has the same nuanced concerns that you do, it's hard to keep showing up when people just don't get it. You know, when people are, you know, upset and pissed off about their chemo curls and you're trying to figure out, is your, you know, your curly Black hair going to come back, or are you stuck with this bone straight hair that is growing out of your hair post chemo? So, and everybody needs and deserves that, to have support from people who they truly identify with and who they don't have to give the backstory with. And that's not to say I've not benefited from community where the women don't necessarily look like me or share the same culture. I absolutely have, but that cannot be all of it. And so I really try to circle back and say, here's a resource for us. Here's something that we can do. And, you know, I'm just a stand also for when the world opens back up, because COVID has been so disruptive for what I'm up to in the world and in our community. But when we can gather together again in, you know, real life, you know, making sure that I am hosting live meetings, not just for Black women with breast cancer, but also for mothers of young children who are navigating breast cancer, because our children are deeply impacted by this. They have a lot of fears and concerns, and it's traumatic for them. And our children need resources as well as we need resources when we're navigating breast cancer and any other cancer for that matter.
No, of course. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And even your job needs resources as well. Say this. Yeah. I was hearing someone on Clubhouse the other day saying that now, you know, after their cancer journey and they worked in HR, so now they work with HR all over the country to educate managers. To navigate the scenario.
Yeah, people just don't get it. I mean, you know, outwardly you can look fine and people like cancer has this hard finite end. Chemo's over, your hair grew back, you know, move on. And they have no idea that you have, you know, these kind of silent disabilities, the brain fog or chemo brain, you know, lymphedema. Breast cancer patients are not the only patients who deal with lymphedema. Chronic, long-term, sometimes disabling conditions from the chemotherapy and the radiation, like, you know, heart failure, lung disease and scarring, you know, hormone disruption, and all of the, you know, impacts that that has on someone's, you know, the speed at which they can do things or their previous degree of productivity. They may not be able to match that. It doesn't mean that they're not valuable in the workplace. It's just that everybody's expectations have to be readjusted. But if you don't have someone to advocate for you with that, you know, it may, like, the world may show up as like, okay, you have this cancer, it's over, there's a hard end, you're fine, let's all move on. Meanwhile, you know, your joints are locked up, or you're, you know, fatigued, or you're hot flashing through the day, or, you know, so many other adverse outcomes. And so it helps to educate people so that, you know, you can continue to feel valuable in your workplace. I think we all want, need, and desire that. I don't think anybody wants to go, you know, lay down and die or just, you know, go sign up for disability. But it's important that the way is made for patients who are in remission or patients who are even in chronic treatment with metastatic cancer of any kind to be able to work and be productive. You know, there's like so many millions of millions of cancer survivors in the country and in the world. And that number is only going to continue to grow as cancer treatment gets more innovative. And so, you know, workplaces have to be prepared to, you know, make concessions and adjustments and things like that for cancer survivors, you know, or for survivors of whatever other chronic condition may develop out of having had a cancer treatment or surgery.
If you have cancer in your 40s, you're likely to live 50% of your life as a survivor.
That's right. And that's, you know, huge. I mean, I have so many patients who are 20, 30, 40, 50-year cancer survivors. And so we need the ability for that next 20, 30, 40, 50 years to be generative, you know. That plays a huge role in people's emotional well-being and their quality of life after cancer. So if we, you know, are unwilling to make accommodations or employ people and value what people bring to the table, if we don't do that, we're really setting them up for poor quality of life, for great financial burdens. And, you know, the trickle-down effect of that is huge.
Yes. Well, I thank you so much, Dr. Alexia. I could be here all day.
Yeah, we could go on forever and ever.
We could go on forever. And it doesn't mean that you won't come back and you won't talk again with us on Mind Bloom. In fact, I would love to invite you as well for a live on Instagram.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great idea that we could do that together. So I thank you so much, Dr. Alexia. Have a beautiful day. And please continue doing what you're doing. It's beautiful work.
Thank you so much. And, you know, I appreciate your time and I appreciate you opening your platform to me to allow me to share my story, because I know that there is, you know, another woman or person, maybe even a man, my story will resonate with, either for them personally or someone that they know and love. And, you know, the trickle down effect of sharing our stories is very real and very impactful. So I'm always grateful to just share. And I appreciate you for allowing me to do that.